Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. Well, you may have heard the news, but stand by now for the worldview. That's right. It is the Weekly Worldview. It's the show where we don't take calls. We don't tolerate sponsors, but we do help focus you on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. It's good to have everybody back as we come to you from the boiler room, the McBurney compound, deep in, and joined in studio, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer who's opening the mail. You're just opening the mail right here while I'm trying to do the show. And you're just going to sit here and open the mail. All right. Well, that's one way to keep yourself occupied. One way. We're going to talk about all kinds of interesting and edifying things today, ladies and gentlemen. But we're going to start with something that may be neither of those. And it involves Spirit Airlines. Now, I don't know if any of you have ever flown on Spirit Airlines, but I have, and I recently just did. Spirit Airlines, I didn't even think it was a real airline for a while. I thought it was some kind of Ponzi scheme or some sort of front operation. That's what I mean, not a Ponzi scheme, but a front operation for something nefarious, because Spirit Airlines is the only airline by which I've ever had the experience, I and about 120 other people showed up at the gate and we were told there is no plane. And there will be no flight, and we don't really have a plan of what to do with you. And we were all astonished. We'd never heard that before. I mean, flights have been canceled, planes have not shown up, but we've never been told basically, you know, it's every man for himself. And came this close to renting a car and driving home from Dallas until I and a few other fortunate patrons found a $39 fare at the second worst airline in America. That would be Frontier Airlines. I think they're in cahoots. Anyway, let's now picture yourself on a Spirit Airlines flight from Chicago to Baltimore. And just think of how depressed you are. You're kind of happy that you're getting out of Chicago, but you're headed to Baltimore. So you're already not in a good mood. When you notice that a man on the plane is vomiting into a woman's hair. Yeah, man vomited into a woman's hair right there, possibly intoxicated. It's possible alcohol was involved. The story, as reported by Fox News, says that the woman and the man reportedly have no relation. And probably never will. It's kind of hard to overcome that one. Although that would make for an interesting how we met story.
Ew.
He vomited into my hair, and the woman was forced to wash her hair in a bathroom sink on the plane. Now that's a trick to try to pull that off. She had to wash a tiny little bit of it at a time, I guess. No water pressure, not enough soap, just that little squish bottle there. Yeah. Anyway, just awful. Well, folks, it all ends rather sadly. The drunk passenger was escorted off the plane, and so was everyone else. The entire passenger cabin, every passenger in the cabin was forced to deplane to allow the aircraft to be cleaned. All right. So you expect me to buy this allegation that Spirit cleaned the vomit out of the plane? You expect me to buy that? I just don't buy it. I mean, come on. I've flown Spirit. They just got everyone off the plane until the smell cleared, and they just let it dry, whatever had splattered all over. Get back on the plane. Get out of here. All right, that's Spirit Airlines, ladies and gentlemen. If you're thinking about flying Spirit because they have low fares, trust me, it's not worth it. Very similar with Frontier. Very similar. Now, Frontier's not quite that bad. Frontier, at least the plane has always shown up eventually with Frontier Airlines. All right, meanwhile, we go from the Chicago to Baltimore flight, interrupted by a vomit event. Yeah. Well, from here, let's go over to Los Angeles, where there are reports that there may be as many as 27,000 unsheltered homeless people. That's how investmentwatchblog.com describes these vagrants, bums is what they are. 27,000 unsheltered homeless people, but the good citizens and politicians there in California made a commitment, let's see, about 2 years ago, a commitment to spend $1.2 billion on a construction program in order to take some of the vagrants and the bums off the street. Here we are 2 years later. I'm sorry, 3 years later. I stand corrected. 3 years after the commitment was made, not a single building has been completed in the $1.2 billion construction project. And the average cost per unit, basically, they're going to build condos for the homeless. Oh. Yeah, condos for the homeless is what I said. And here's the interesting part, or I should say the disturbing part, the concerning part, the mildly amusing but borderline catastrophic part, is that the median price of a condo in Los Angeles is $540,000, and the price of each homeless bum condo has now soared past $530,000 per unit. So with many of the apartments costing $600,000 each. Building costs of many of the homeless units will exceed the median sale price of a market rate condominium. And that sounds about right. And then the bums will trash the place out. You got that going for you. Let's see. Prices on each individual vagrant condo rose dramatically because of costs for items other than actual construction. If you would have asked me, what caused the price increase? The bottom of my list would have been actual construction, right? Because prices went up not because of, items not for construction, but items other than actual construction, consultants and financing top the list. Yeah, such as consultants and financing. It's the skim, right? What did the mafia used to call it? The VIG. That's right. That's the off the top that the politicians and their families and their campaign committees get. The VIG right off the top. The patronage jobs and the contracts that go to family members. You know, for the in-laws, for the nephews, for the mistresses, all of that. And the bums are still laying in the street, poisoning the water supply with their feces and other waste products, while hundreds of millions of dollars are basically being squandered building condos that make somebody feel good about themselves, I suppose. I'm sure the citizens, when they checked yes on the box there, when they voted the $1.2 billion to house the homeless, I'm sure they felt good about themselves. I'm a good person, pulls the lever. Giving vagrants money or housing or clothing or food is the worst thing you can do. They need to get very hungry and very uncomfortable, and then they probably get their life together, all right? But anyway, it's California, so what do you expect? But we are here at the Weekly Worldview ready with answers on how to help the homeless. Yes, you don't buy them a condo. No, you make them hungry and uncomfortable. And then perhaps, but we'll see. We're waiting for California to implode so that we can save it at a reasonable rate. That's what we're hoping for. Meanwhile, we go over to the Dim New World file, where again we are in the formerly great state of California, where in their eminent wisdom, the politicians there in California have banned travel-sized bottles of shampoo and lotions at hotels. That's right. From now on, when you go to the hotel, there's not going to be that cool little bottle of some new shampoo you never heard of so that you can try it, right? And some of them are really good, and sometimes they smell cool, and you're like, I like this shampoo. It was a great little advertising racket for the shampoo companies, but no more. No, we can't have a civilization here. You got to pack your own shampoo, and at the airport, they're going to shake you down. If you bring too much shampoo, forget it. You can't bring that on the plane. You might blow up the plane. You mix the shampoo and the conditioner. We know what you're up to. So I don't know what we're going to do for shampoo and conditioner at hotels in California in the future, but the environmentalists feel very good about themselves. Yeah, now don't get too worried. This law will take effect in 2023 is when the law will take effect. And it's only going to apply to lodging establishments with more than 50 rooms. Hey, but you smaller businesses running those hotels with less than 50 rooms, you've got to stop using them by 2024. Don't think we're letting you off the hook. Certainly not. And you can be fined, by the way, if the inspectors came in, kicked in your doors, found shampoo bottles in your hotel after 2024, a $500 per day fine for every day that the little shampoo bottles are rolling around in your tubs. That's right. All right. We have a quote from, do we want to quote these people? Assemblymember Ash of San Jose, who co-authored the bill, she said, small plastic bottles under 12 ounces cause a sizable amount of waste. And I believe this law will help reduce the problem. Well, by definition, if the bottle is under 12 ounces, that would be a relatively small amount of waste. It's a small bottle. Have you ever seen how big these bottles are? Ash, Carla, how come her last name is first and her first name is last? Shouldn't it be Carla Ash? But it's not. It's Ash Carla because everything's upside down and backwards in California. Anyway, many cities and companies, according to, who is this? This is CNN. Many cities and companies are moving to ban single-use plastics. That's the new enemy of mankind. This is how they're going to save the planet. They're going to ban water bottles in airports, straws, and plastic grocery bags. And that's supposed to keep the sea level at bay, at least for a little while, maybe the next 12 years. After that, forget about it. It's like flying on Spirit. It's every man for himself after that. Now, New York State is looking to prohibit hotel plastics with a new bill sponsored in New York, which is barely behind California in their level of insanity. Senator Ted there in New York, he says, little everyday actions like eliminating small plastic bottles will have a positive impact on our environment. By barring single-use plastic toiletries, we are safeguarding our environment, says that Senator Ted. Yeah, they claim they're going to save 250 pounds of plastic in every average hotel. And meanwhile, these same politicians legalize and advocate for some of the most destructive moral decay that's ever been seen since the height of the Roman Empire. And they're responsible for all that, and yet they're worried about the environment. You've created a toxic environment for the spirit and the soul and the mind, you filthy, disgusting hypocrites. And you try to ameliorate the guilt in your mind for destroying a perfectly good country, a perfectly good state like California, a perfectly decent place like New York. You try to ameliorate your guilt by banning plastic bottles to make yourself feel better. But it's all just stupidity. And then here we go. Another one from the Dim New World file. In California, Pacific Gas and Electric is having to shut off their power because of high winds that could cause wildfires and have caused wildfires. Why? Because nobody's built any new infrastructure in California in I don't know how long, maybe my lifetime, because they're terrified to try to deal with the code issues and the environmental studies and the environmental impact. So the power company has to turn off the power because they're afraid their power lines will get blown down by high winds. I don't think high winds are a new thing. I think high winds have been high for a long time, for several thousand years, and since electricity, 120 years, we've known about high winds. We've known about power lines. We've known how to maintain power lines, but apparently the geniuses in California are focused on the ridiculous, and they can't seem to master any of the fundamentals. Worldview. I'm your host, Doug McBurney. So good to have you. I'm just checking the web there in the break. I'm always doing research. And Shepard Smith has departed Fox News, and Matt Drudge managed to find the gayest looking picture of Shep Smith ever shot. Anyway, we don't know exactly why Shep has left Fox, perhaps to pursue a relationship with Don Lemon. He's a homo. He's their flagship anchorman, is old Shep Smith. He's a homo. Well, maybe he's going to pursue a relationship with Anderson Cooper, possibly. Maybe Kimberly Guilfoyle, although I don't think he goes in for trans. He's just a homo. Anyway, Shep, we're glad to see you go. That's one less homo I have to see on Fox News, which seems to be overrun with him. All right. So we'll move on from Shepard Smith and say farewell to him and wish him, we're done. All right. Turning off the lights in California. Meanwhile, we have a dig in Israel. A dig in Israel has uncovered the ruins of a 5,000-year-old city that has a layout that is remarkably similar to New York City, which was also built by the Jews.
That's good.
Right? I'll link to this because you got to see this. It's the cross streets. It's the short blocks one way and the long blocks the other way. If you've ever had to walk in New York, I can't remember which way it is, but one way is easy and the other way is really, really difficult because the blocks are super long. Well, this megalopolis is about 5,000 years old. Let's see here. It was at its largest during the Bronze Age. About 6,000 people lived there, and back then, that's a pretty good-sized city. The location offered exceptionally good conditions to settle, such as sources of water, strategic proximity to the ancient commercial routes. The city was fortified, and its urban design is clearly visible, according to one of the archaeologists involved in the dig. It's a web of roads and alleys. Really cool. Let's see. Of course, they had a temple for their religious rituals. This is pre-Jewish Israel, if this is indeed 5,000 years old. This was probably built by the Philistines and whatnot. And the, I can't remember all the Eanes and the Ites that were in there. The Canaanites, I suppose. All right, let's see. The excavations have revealed that 2,000 years earlier, a different village stood on the same site, which is also very interesting. And they say that this discovery will change everything scholars know about the urbanization process in the land of Israel. I don't know why I thought the story was cool. I'm into people digging up stuff out of the dirt. It fascinates me. And it does show that, the Bible's assertion that land has been continually inhibited for somewhere around 5,000 to 6,000 or 7,000 years is definitely true. Uh-huh. So that's definitely true. But what about, where's my, here we go. We go now deep into the science, really, file. With a story from NBC News. NBC News reports that in the next decade or so, it's entirely possible that you'll see a headline announcing that NASA has found evidence of life in outer space. Okay, did you get that? It's entirely possible. Why do you say entirely possible? Couldn't you just say it's possible? If it's possible, then it's entirely possible. You know why? It's because they're shucking and jiving a little bit here because they know this is a bogus story. It's entirely possible. And so here we go. The director of NASA's Planetary Science Division thinks the public might be discombobulated by the discovery of biology beyond our own planet. He's concerned that we haven't thought much about the next steps by scientists. Should we suddenly confront the reality of Martian life? Okay. So this entire article is written so that line will appear in the article somewhere. The reality of Martian life. because your average millennial sees that, and he sees that enough times, eventually he assumes that we all agree there's life on other planets, right? I mean, I read that article. They talked about the reality of Martian life. All right. Okay, so in 2020, Mars and Earth, according to NBC News, and I haven't checked this, and they could be just making this up, Mars and Earth will be relatively close to each other in their orbits around the sun. Explorers here on Earth plan to be sending a small brigade of spacecraft toward the red planet. The new craft will be on the hunt for life itself, dead or alive. They want to find something alive, or they want to find something dead that looks like it was alive. Okay, so I'm all for going up there and checking out Mars. I would love to be involved with the rocket launch and all that. Let's see. And here's the concern, folks. So when we fire all these rockets off with all their sensors and test equipment and all there over at Mars, NASA warns us that they could dig up compelling evidence of biology. They could dig up compelling evidence, not just evidence, but compelling evidence for biological life. You walk back with me to 1996, as NBC does here, because you'll remember in 1996, one of the banner stories of the year, so exciting that Bill Clinton whispered it into the ear of Monica Lewinsky. It was the blockbuster science story of the year. Fossilized microbes had been found in a meteorite known to be a hunk of ancient Martian regolith. You remember that? That's right. The headlines were "Life on Mars." And even Bubba Bill Jeff Clinton believed it. Well, fast forward, turns out the Martian meteorite story changed as the actual evidence was examined. And the argument for ancient microbes on the red planet turns out it was it was a fairly weak argument. In fact, it turns out that it was kind of stupid. And that Bubba Bill Jeff was lying to Monica Lewinsky. I mean, about Mars and other things, I'm sure. But despite the fact that the last story was a hoax, or at least just a giant embarrassing error at its best, NBC says, but what if we find extant life on Mars, meaning actual living things on Mars that are alive right now? What would we do? ? A discovery that Mars has had life. I'm sorry. A discovery that Mars has or had life would be enormously significant. It would be evidence that life is a process that begins on many, many worlds. And consequently, that the universe is brimming with biology. Brimming, I say. An idea that, as of now, is no more than an appealing hypothesis. Okay. So the idea that the universe is brimming with biology, that's not even a hypothesis. You can't even construct an algorithm by which anyone could be convinced that the universe is brimming with life. Because we've looked awfully far out there for an awfully long time, and we've found exactly none. So now the possibility that there could be a speck of something alive out there somewhere, that might be something you could hypothesize. But the idea that the universe is brimming with biology is, it's just stupid, that's all. But that's what you get when you go to the science, really, file. All right. Okay, so let's move over. Let's put the aliens aside here for a moment. We'll move back down to the real world, where the Syrian civil war that Barack Obama stumbled backwards into, possibly on purpose, I don't know. I don't think anybody could have possibly seen the chaos that has happened in the wake of Barack Obama's efforts to, I don't know what he was trying to do in the Middle East, but whatever he was trying to do, if he was trying to destroy the world, well, he at least got that started. And now we've got the Turks have poured into northern Syria, and they're bombing the Kurds, and maybe some of our guys, because we still have some guys there. And Donald Trump just says, we're leaving. And the Kurds are like, wait a minute, we have all these ISIS prisoners. We're going to have to go fight the Kurds. How are we supposed to guard these prisoners? Well, let me just go to the story from San Francisco Chronicle. There's furor, I tell you, over the decision to pull U.S. troops out of northeastern Syria. And Donald Trump called the Turkish president, and we don't have a transcript yet, but I'm sure he was trying to get the Turkish president to dig up some dirt on Elizabeth Warren. I'm sure that was part of that was the first part of the call. And the second part, they talked about the fact that Turkey's very uncomfortable with the Kurds having establishing themselves in northeastern Syria with the help of the Americans. I'm sure Erdogan is not happy about that. Let Mr. Trump know that. And for whatever reason, Mr. Trump decided on a dime, okay, we'll just pull out. And Turkey, you can go ahead and attack. It's really bizarre. Donald Trump is I think he's a lightweight. I really do. And I think he, I think he's fairly ignorant of geopolitics. And, but he's not as bad as Barack Obama. He's just trying to clean up Barack's mess, but he doesn't really know what to do about it. So the Turks, there's a reason the Turks don't want the Kurds on their border with any established landmass, and I'll get to that. But back to San Francisco Chronicle. In the view of critics of Donald Trump's decision, his decision amounts to the abandonment of America's Syrian Kurdish allies to a massive Turkish military assault. Let's see. And then, well, they go back to Donald Trump's phone call with Tayyip Yusuf Erdogan, whatever his, I don't know if I got your name right there. I apologize if I mangled that. Trump and Erdogan, after discussing any dirt on Elizabeth Warren or maybe the guy from New Jersey, the empty suit. I can't even think of his name. The guy who's running for president, the chunky black guy. I can't even remember his name. The bald guy, Cory Booker. Thank you, my crack staff. I think he's chunky. I don't know. Maybe not. Anyway, after Erdogan told Donald Trump, look, I don't have any dirt on Cory Booker. Let's talk about our agreement we have. Apparently, there was an agreement to jointly patrol a safe zone in northeastern Syria along the Turkish border that would be cleared of the Kurdish force to which Ankara objected. Ankara objected to the Kurds being there. To Washington, the Kurds were indispensable fighters in the war against the Islamic State. To Turkey, they are considered terrorists allied with Turkish Kurds seeking autonomy. All right. It's just a mess. It's a big, sloppy mess. And now the Kurds are going to be bombed by the Turks. And well, here's my bold prediction, although I know you shouldn't make bold predictions because when you're wrong, you look like an idiot. But I'm willing to take that risk on this one because, so listen, Turkey has now attacked the Kurds, right? They've started the shelling. They started the air attacks. But I really believe that like so many Islamic armies before them, the mighty Turkish army that looks unbeatable right now will be either defeated by the Kurds or more likely fought to a standstill. Within a couple of years, the Turks will probably have to leave with their tail between their legs because they're listen, the Turks, they're fighting an army of Kurds who are motivated by survival, right? The Kurds know that if they lose this, they lose everything. They lose their homeland, their life, their family, their legacy, everything. It's survival. So the Kurds are extremely motivated. The Turkish army, on the other hand, is motivated by authoritarian force of a dictator, Tayyip Yusuf Jeff Erdogan, whatever his name is. So I believe that the Turks will be more than likely it'll be fought to a standstill by the Kurds just because it got more motivation. All right, and then my other question on this story is why are the Kurds guarding ISIS terrorist prisoners in prisons in northeastern Syria? Why are there ISIS fighters in prison? Don't these people know what you do with ISIS? ISIS cuts off people's heads. ISIS is the most blood-soaked, vicious terrorist organization that I've ever been familiar with. And you don't put ISIS fighters in prison. You kill all of them to the man. Every single one of them with extreme prejudice.
Locked in a cage, thrown to the lions on a
Doug McBurney. Welcome back. And that does remind me that the one group likely to lose in all of this the most are the Christians, whatever Christians are left in Syria. And maybe that was Barack Obama's biggest motivation, was to cleanse the Middle East of Christians. If that was his goal, him and Hillary too, by the way, who started all this, if that was their goal, it's been an extremely effective operation. And so we need to pray for our brothers and sisters in Christ over there who are about to be exposed once again to, I hate to use the term ethnic cleansing, religious cleansing, I suppose. Anyway, it's very, very tragic that the Western powers have lost the ability to lead the world. And so now we've got second and third tier dictators who are actually steering the history of all of civilization in the whole world. And they're not qualified to do it. But apparently neither are we anymore, or the British. All right, so that's where we are. And where we are, I told you we're coming to you from the boiler room in the bowels of the McBurney compound, where just 48 hours ago, we thought we had a skunk in here. Because we opened the door to come in and to just look at the furnace, you know, because the temperature dropped 80 degrees. Right? Almost. That's. I don't even know if that's an exaggeration, actually. In 24 hours, I think the temperature dropped close to 80 degrees.
No.
Seriously, yeah. It went from 80-something down to 70 degrees. Anyway, dramatic, right? So you got to look at the furnace. We open the door. The place smells like a skunk. I mean, heavy-duty skunky. Anyway, so the bird whisperer went and got a live catch trap because that's all we have. And we put a trap in here thinking maybe there's a skunk, but apparently there's no skunk. We were wondering, how could a skunk get in here? And if that's possible, that needs to be fixed, whatever that is. But anyway, what we think actually happened is we think there is a skunk living under our front porch, which is right above the boiler room here. And we think that skunk got spooked by something and sprayed under our house. And the smell, it saturated the boiler room. But we're happy to report that the odor has cleared out. And not unlike the folks over at Spirit Airlines, we're going to clean the place up now that the smell is gone. Don't know what we're going to do about the skunk under the porch. That's a whole different situation, and we're not going to think about that right now. But at some point, that could come to a head, and it could be ugly. When you got a skunk making its home under your porch. Anyway, that's just a recipe for, at least one really interesting event that's in our future, probably. All right, so, by the way, one more reference to the story about Turkey. Erdogan, Tayyip Erdogan, or as they pronounce it, Erdogan, he basically threatened to send 3.5 million Syrian refugees to Europe if the European countries give him a problem about his attack and occupation of Syria that Erdogan is attempting. Well, listen here, Tayyip, you might not have to worry about it because the Kurds might not allow you to stay there. Think about that. I know Turkey's got the numbers. I know they have more tanks. They have helicopters. We'll just see. We'll see how this mighty Islamic army of Turkey fares. I've just never been that impressed, frankly, by Islamic armies. That's at least not in my lifetime. All right. So we go to the Queering of America file, unfortunately. I hate to have to drag you into this, but here's what's going on. Between 2013 and 2019, the Food and Drug Administration recorded 41,213 adverse events, including about 6,500 deaths and over 25,000 serious reactions in patients who took the hormone blocker drug that is so popular with the transgender set. The transing of America. That's what I should be under, the transing of America. So all of the mentally deranged adults who are telling children that they need to question whether or not they're a boy or a girl, What those mentally deranged, abusive adults like to do then is to inject the kids, or maybe it's a pill, I don't know. But they get them hopped up on these hormone blockers so that they can start changing the boy into something approaching a girl or vice versa. Anyway, the drugs are given to children who say their gender identity is not consistent with their biological sex. Well, the only reason children say that is because there's an abusive, mentally deranged adult involved. Children do not come to that conclusion on their own, okay? That's all. And so now we've got they call it a, they call this drug, which is actually approved for treatment of prostate cancer in men and endometriosis in women. So it's a real medicine. They call it a puberty blocker. So before the young girl or the young boy goes through puberty, they get them hopped up on these drugs, these very strong drugs. And some of the kids are dying. 6,500 have died over the past 7 years. Wow. 6,500 deaths. I know. How many kids are you transing out there? Anyway, it's being used as a puberty blocker. And this is being done, by the way, according to reporters at Breitbart. This transing of American and killing, frankly, of American children. Is being done with the support of the American Academy of Pediatrics and the Endocrine Society. So medical doctors are actually endorsing this kind of thing, despite, I mean, how could a medical doctor, I mean, this is definitely a political movement. This is not a clinical, scientific, medical, this is not governed or driven, I should say, by scientific or medical or clinical anything. This is all about politics. Get in line with the transing of America, or you might not get that next grant. You might lose your job. You might lose your career. Doc, get in line. But I truly believe this is an extreme minority of crazy people. And if enough of us would just stand up and say, quit it, you're nuts, I think we could stop this. But if we don't stop it, it's gonna be too late before too long. I mean, forget the sea level rise and the end of the world in 12 years due to global climate change. Forget about that. I mean, this could be the end of civilization due to the fact that we're all going insane and we're being governed and motivated by criminally insane people. I mean, how long are we supposed to stand for this? 6,500 deaths related to, I'll tell you what. Anyway, complications on the use of this drug include malignant tumors, heart attacks, blood clots, suicidal behavior, brittle bones, painful joints, and sterility. Wow. Now, the American College of Pediatricians, who are the conservatives, who are not insane, have compiled significant research on the effects of puberty blockers and cross-sex hormones in children, and they basically say, look, they're dangerous. They're dangerous. The use of the drug in gender-confused children, they say, constitutes unethical experimentation. That's one way to put it. They say informed consent is not possible because obviously a gender-confused child is the victim of some sort of abuse that has led to mental illness, to where it's quite possible this child doesn't really have the capacity to consent. But the adults have the capacity to abuse the kids, and it's just shocking. I don't know. I can't say any more about that. It's just awful. Now, speaking of drugs, let's go to the death penalty file, where a doctor in Virginia, listen to this, he prescribed more than 500,000 opioid tablets over a 19-month period, raking in roughly $700,000, did this doctor, selling opioid pills. Well, he's been convicted of illegally prescribing more than 500,000 opiate tablets, and he's been sentenced to 40 years. Joel Smithers is the doctor. He was convicted of 859 counts of illegally prescribing drugs, sentenced to 40 years, and ordered to pay an $86,000 assessment. I guess that's a fine. I don't know. So a woman from West Virginia died after Smithers prescribed her oxycodone and oxymorphone. And the jury found affirmatively that the prescriptions caused the death of this woman. She overdosed on some of this drug dealer's pills. And so that's why this is in the death penalty file, because Joel Smithers should not be sentenced to 40 years. He should not be sentenced to pay a fine of $86,000. He should be put to death publicly, painfully, and as soon as possible, so that maybe we could take the first step on the path to mitigating this opioid crisis. The first step on the path is to choke off the supply. And the way you choke off the supply in such a lucrative business is you make anyone involved in that business afraid that they are going to be killed for what they're doing. And they should be killed for what they're doing. That's what they deserve, and that is what Joel Smithers deserves. But that's not what Joel's going to get. What Joel's going to get is out of jail someday, right? And that's going to be a lesson to all the other dope dealers out there, that there's a good chance that you can get away with this. All right, now, we all remember the Amber Geiger case, right? No, we don't, because I didn't talk about it much here on the Weekly Worldview, but I did hear about it. This was the trial of Amber Geiger. She mistook another man's apartment for her own, one floor below. She was a police officer, by the way, in uniform. She opened the door and thought this guy was a burglar, and she shot him to death. And she claimed that she just, it was the wrong apartment, and she didn't know. And so I never really knew all the details and the facts. I don't buy her story, frankly. She shot the guy, she killed the guy. There has to be some consequence. But that's all that aside, that trial is over, and she's been sentenced to 10 years for murder, believe it or not. But let's move, because a witness in that trial who testified at the trial has now been killed in a shooting. That's right, Joshua Brown. You'll remember his testimony by all the tattoos he had on his neck, perhaps. Now he's been shot and killed last Friday in Dallas. That's right. And police say there's actually no connection to the Amber Geiger trial. This is just another average day in the big city where, you know, a man with neck tattoos gets killed doing a drug deal. Thank you, boys. Put those drums away. It's time to get back to the news of the day. For that, we go out to St. Paul, Minnesota, where St. Paul, Minnesota police officer Joe Ryan approached a woman around 8 p.m. outside of a store, and he was there because store employees had told him that the woman had hidden items under her clothing without paying for them. Yes, she was suspected of shoplifting. So the officer began to negotiate with the woman. He offered to let her return the stolen items without punishment if she would just give them back. So she denied having stolen anything. And then the negotiation continued, and she eventually returned a single item, at which point the law enforcement officer called her out. And she then became uncooperative. A scuffle ensued. And then the woman struck Ryan in the chest with a screwdriver and on the arm with a knife after he offered to let her off. Now, his His bulletproof vest protected him from the screwdriver blow, thankfully. And eventually, Officer Ryan was able to bring the woman under control and arrest her. Okay, and so this was it's just a lesson in, a police officer's, they have to make split-second decisions sometimes, right? And sometimes that can cost a police officer their life. Sometimes that can get an innocent person killed. It's a very tough job. And then sometimes the cop, they kill or arrest the right guy. That's what happens most of the time, is the cop kills or arrests the proper person, as what eventually happened in this case. But anyway, what are the odds that Officer Joe is going to be nice to the next shoplifter? Officer Joe probably learned a valuable lesson. If there's a vagrant who's shoplifting stuff, that's probably one of the worst human beings on the planet. There's a reason they don't have anywhere to stay. Nobody will let them stay there. No, I don't want her at my house. No. So they end up on the street, and there's a reason they're on the street. They're horrible people, most of them. The vast majority. All right. Unless you're in California this week and you've just fled your home for a wildfire, then you're homeless. Now, that's a homeless person that I can respect. And I would probably let them stay at my house. All right. And as all that happens and California burns, wait a minute. Was there another big story that I let slip through the... maybe not. All right. Maybe I'm getting down to the end here. Oh, it is. We are getting down to the end of the show is what's happening. That's why my stack of news got so thin here. Ilhan Omar is in the news again. Ilhan Omar and her husband have three children, and she has now filed for divorce. That's right. Amidst allegations that she had an affair with a D.C.-based political consultant named Tim. Tim. Omar filed for divorce on her 37th birthday, ironically enough. And she is asking the court to grant her and her soon-to-be estranged husband joint legal and physical custody of their three minor children. So, Ilhan Omar, in addition to doing her best to destroy a perfectly good country, has now, with her own hand, destroyed a perfectly... a functional family, I guess. I mean, she's an insane leftist Islamist, so anything she's involved with could hardly be called perfect or even good, except this is probably the one good thing she did, was to have children and raise them. You know, it actually redeems some portion of her horrible contribution to human civilization. But now the three children's lives have been destroyed, turned upside down, ripped apart, because she is a slut, in addition to being an Islamist maniac, leftist, crazy. In August, you remember back in August, D.C.-based Dr. Beth Minot had filed for divorce from her husband, Tim, alleging that she was carrying on an affair with Omar, or that he was carrying on an affair with Ilhan Omar, and now there's more evidence piling up that Ilhan Omar is a home-wrecking slut, you know, in addition to being a maniacal leftist socialist creep. Oh, that was it, creeps. I knew I had another story. So are any of you shocked that it has now been revealed that pretty much everyone at NBC News is a creep? Pretty much everyone, from the president all the way down to, you know, maybe the janitor is not. He's probably the only one who didn't do everything he could to cover up for Weinstein and Matt Lauer. And I mean, not to mention Bill Clinton and Hillary and the entire leftist establishment. NBC News has been running interference and cover for the entire leftist establishment while they've abused and assaulted everything normal and good in our country. And they've dragged us down to the level of... the criminally insane is what they've done. And NBC News and all the creeps over there have been actively covering for and covering up for. And yeah, you're all a bunch of creeps. I hope they hate each other all the time. Can you imagine what it's like to work at NBC News? You never know who's going to stab you in the back at any given moment because everyone's a creep. Ew. Couldn't happen to a nicer bunch of people. Okay, so now we go from there to the domestic tranquility file. Oh, this is just... All right, so Ilhan Omar files for divorce, okay? So let's check in on the state of the health of marital marriage in America, I suppose. Domestic tranquility file. A suspect allegedly drove up and sideswiped 58-year-old Noelia Mateo as she was getting into her car. Mateo fell under her car after the crash, and then the suspect crashed into a van and some other parked cars. Then witnesses say that the man got out of his car and was trying to pull her out from under her car by her leg. This is after he hit her with his car. Well, she wouldn't come out, I'm sure. So he got in her car that she was under, and he ran her over. So, and then she managed to crawl to the sidewalk to somehow drag herself to the sidewalk when the suspect then jumped on her, stabbed her, and slashed the victim with a machete before leaving the scene. And police say that the attacker was her ex-husband. Yeah, the ex-husband took off in the victim's car, and at last report, or at least as much as I can find, we don't know where the husband is. He got away. Police say they're searching for 63-year-old Victor Mateo in connection with Noelia Mateo's murder. Wow. Just a shocking story. And this is just another one of these stories that 50 years ago, this would have stopped the presses. I mean, the whole country would have been talking about this story. Now, you try to find out what happened. Did they catch the guy? You can't find out because there's 15 other equally horrifically shocking murders that have taken place. They're taking up all the bandwidth, and it's just hard to keep up with the bloodshed that's occurring. And just this is just a vicious, brutal, just vicious. All right, what can you say about that? Divorce is an ugly, ugly, ugly thing. I mean, people who loved each other, when they decide to hate on each other, man, it gets really ugly. All right. Speaking of ugly, let's go to the cowardice and greed file. That's right. Cowardice and greed is where we find ourselves. And we're talking about the National Basketball Association. Yes. I can't remember who it was, but somebody said something about China and that maybe they shouldn't murder anybody in Hong Kong. And now a firestorm. The NBA has basically told... The NBA has basically created an environment in which players and coaches are afraid to speak out against what's happening against against Hong Kong by the communist murderers in China. The murderous, dictatorial, criminal gang that took China hostage 70 years ago is looking now to move in on Hong Kong. And you're not allowed to protest it if you want to keep getting checks from the NBA or from your team. Uh-huh. What happened was somebody said something that offended the Chinese, so the Chinese started severing ties with the league, which meant cutting off some of the money from the NBA. And this article from CNBC is talking about how sports agents, the guys who are agents for the athletes, they're basically telling the athletes, look, don't talk about it. You don't want to upset the apple cart here, because apparently the NBA basketball is really popular in China. And the NBA is making a fortune entertaining the criminal gang that's murdering and brutalizing and kidnapping people in China. And the NBA doesn't want to jeopardize that with anything as pedestrian as free speech. Certainly won't have any of that. One sports agent said, I think it's a fine line. And when you're walking that fine line, it's best not to even play around with it. So just shut up. Is basically the attitude of, these are American people. These are free Americans. And they are self-restricting their own right to free speech for money. And this is where we've come. And this is why we're going to lose this country, at least as we know it. And the Chinese might be able to establish rule over us without ever firing a shot. They're just going to buy us out and slowly change our foundation. They're going to change our fundamental attitudes about liberty and freedom and God and truth and all of that. And they've got 100 years to do it. And we're letting them in to do it. It's just shocking. All right. And it's sad and depressing is what it is. Okay. So let's go now to reason number 1,212. To get or keep your children out of the government schools, there was a fight at Frederick Douglass High School in Northwest Atlanta. A teacher apparently was trying to prevent two ninth grade students from fighting. Apparently the teacher tried to stop the one student who the teacher assumed was starting the fight. When that student began to punch the teacher repeatedly in the head, pounding the teacher down onto the ground. And the video is, well, I'll link to the video if you want to watch a teacher getting beat up by a freshman in high school. The student was arrested and charged with assault. And then the Atlanta Public Schools, they released a statement, because nobody wanted to get up behind a lectern and actually take any questions on how come the teacher got beat down by the student, and why are the students so out of control that that they can manage to beat down the teacher. The Atlanta Public Schools released a statement saying, quote, "Safety and security of students and staff is top priority at APS." That's Atlanta Public Schools. That's it. Why do I lisp? Because I think the government schools are full of queers, perverts, creeps, and other people who are generally not qualified. Forget to raise a child. They're not even qualified to instruct a child in academics. Forget about all the rest. All right. Meanwhile, Donald Trump is in danger of losing his evangelical base, I guess. So Reverend Franklin Graham has gone on tour for he's gone on tour for Donald Trump, believe it or not. Reverend Franklin Graham has dubbed his tour Decision America. That's Decision America. Could have put something about the Bible in there. God or Jesus, maybe. No, Franklin, no. He's gone all red, white, and blue for Donald Trump, I guess. So he's out on the road, and one of the fans at Decision America Festival was Christina, a 44-year-old evangelical. She says, "I do feel like we are, as Christians, the first line of defense for the president. Donald Trump is supporting our Christian principles and trying to do his best, even while everybody's against him." So I apologize, Christina and Reverend, the right Reverend Franklin Graham. I just don't see it. I don't see Donald Trump supporting our Christian principles. I'm sorry. If you could point it out to me, I'd love to change my mind on that. I mean, I know he pays lip service to religious freedom, and I know he's against late-term abortion, but as far as I know, neither of those are Christian principles. And so I just beg to differ with all you gullible evangelicals who've been bamboozled by this. I mean, he's like a carnival barker, for crying out loud. And I can't say anymore. I'm getting frustrated. Anyway, and I know a lot of you people love Donald Trump, and I probably lose audience members because I'm telling you folks, I got a really bad feeling that you're all going to be really embarrassed. It's going to be like waking up with a really bad hangover, not remembering what you did the night before the Donald Trump presidency. All right, so that's it, though. You're forewarned. That's all I can do is speak my mind and try to tell you what I think is right and true. And I know what that is, by the way. And so I am qualified to speak it. All right, that's it for the Weekly Worldview. I want to thank my friends at RealScienceRadio.com and at AmericanRightToLife.com. And, of course, my other brother, Daryl, who makes it all happen here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, along with my extremely attractive audio engineer. Should the Lord tarry, we will return next week. And until then, may the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.